Do not attempt to change the channel.
All media are extensions of some human faculty.
Is books part of the media?
Media, we don't need it, do we?
Baby, this thing is bigger than all of us.
The media. A lot of you out there probably never even heard of the word.
Media is any form of communication. It can be radio, television, computers.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
You know, we live in the most mediated society in world history. You spend 10 to 12 hours a day with media. And so I think it makes sense to think about, in a sort of systematic and sustained way, our relationship with media.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Be the Media. You're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. I'm Marian Vanderzon here in the studio with Neil Scobie. Hi, Neil.
Good afternoon, Marian.
And folks, we have an incredible show lined up for you today. The studio is jam-packed, and I'm really excited about this. First up, we have artists and writers Brian Falconer, Allison Watt, Harold Allinson, Dan Gray, and Kim Goldberg, and they're all here to talk about Art for an Oil-Free Coast. This is a multimedia ongoing project that includes a stunning book, a film, and an art exhibition, and I can say I've just come from the art exhibition, and it is really, really phenomenal, and so I encourage you all to go there and take a look, but we'll get into that as we get into the interview. This is a massive undertaking by Rain Coast Conservation Foundation. It brought 50 Canadian artists together to use their art in order to protect the Great Bear Rainforest. The results document the beauty of the area, a region that is currently at risk due to proposed pipeline and supertanker routes, and of course this is connected to the Alberta tar sands.
Then Holly Bright, founder of Crimson Coast Dance and DB Boyko, join us to talk about the upcoming performance at the Malaspina Theatre, What the Water Whispers, and Avatar. These two shows showcase our relationship to contemporary dance, theatre, and technology in innovative ways. We'll find out how the shows were conceived and what to expect for the January 4th performance.
We're going to be right back with the folks from Art for an Oil-Free Coast. But in the interim, this is a piece from Mae Moore. This track is called O Canada from her album Folklore. And I'd like to mention that Mae Moore is one of the 50 Canadian artists who also did a piece for the book.
Of my place in time compared with this granite mountainside. Who could deny the importance of this river that flows so deep and wide? Oh, this land that shapes our consciousness, so rooted in the tundra and the lake. Fires in me a sense of place from every sunset to when each day breaks. Have you ever seen the northern lights or heard the song a wheat field sings? Watch the waves crash against Siwash rock or seen the scarlet flash of a blackbird's wing? Oh, this land is vast and changing fast and means so many things to me. From foothills through prairie, boreal forests, to sea, to sea, to sea. I carry your effort.
And so we have with us five artists and writers from, as mentioned, Art for an Oil-Free Coast. So let me let you know who we have with us. First up, we have Brian Falconer. Brian has headed Raincoast's Marine Operations Program for more than a decade, overseeing the operation of Achiever, the organization's research vessel. He's a pioneer in boat-based ecotourism, and Brian has a long history of captaining vessels on the BC and Alaska coasts. He restored the schooner Maple Leaf, originally built in 1904, and as Raincoast's guide outfitter coordinator, Brian led the foundation's recent acquisition of a commercial hunting tenure which encompasses the heart of Spirit Bear territory. Next up, we have Allison Watt. Allison is a visual artist and writer whose painting and writing are both informed by the natural world. Her work includes botanical waters, colors, as well as still lifes, landscapes, and abstracts in mixed media, plaster, acrylic, and oil. Allison has shown her work in group and solo shows in Vancouver and on Vancouver Island, and she teaches painting in her studio on Protection Island and abroad in southern France. In her 20s, Allison worked as a seabird biologist in the Scott Islands, an experience she transformed into the award-winning book The Last Island, a naturalist's sojourn on Triangle Island. She has sailed BC's west coast and has worked as a naturalist along its length from the Strait of Georgia to Johnson Strait, the Great Bear Rainforest, the Kitlope Valley, and Haida Gwaii. Next up, we have Harold Allinson. Harold holds a lifelong interest in painting and drawing, but didn't express his talent fully until he took early retirement. He then delved seriously into his art and hasn't looked back. Much of Harold's stimulation comes from the area where he lives, the inspiring scenery of British Columbia's west coast. Like many artists, he's acutely aware of the natural beauty around him and has an eye for shapes, patterns, and the effects of lights and darks. His watercolors depict boats and the people connected to them, the aged, battered tugs that still provide sustenance for skipper and crew, and the older fishing boats that are quickly disappearing. His paintings are bold, realistic works often expressed in strong colors, revealing water reflections late in the day, early morning sunlight, or deep shadows, the style of painting that will catch the viewer's eye from a distance. We then have Dan Gray. Dan Gray was born in Vancouver in 1947, has worked in soft pastel since 1975. He lives in Errington on Vancouver Island near the coast where he's most at home. He's been designated Premier Pastelist of Canada by the Pastel Society of Canada, and Steveston's Grand Prix of Art trophy is named the Gray Cup for Dan's dedication to plein air. Dan is the founder of the Grand Prix d'Art of Qualicum Beach, now in its 20th year. Recently, Dan represented Qualicum Beach at the 2010 Winter Olympics, and his work on a project to paint 2010 people from life ended with more than 2,500 figures. In 2011, he curated a show of historical and contemporary Canadian pastels, Pastel by Invite. And last but not least, we have Kim Goldberg with us. She's an award-winning poet and journalist living in Nanaimo, BC. She's the author of 6 books, including Red Zone and Where to See Wildlife on Vancouver Island. She holds a degree in biology and is an avid bird watcher, trailbreaker, and nature lover. Wow, we're in good company. Welcome to you all.
Thank you for having us on, Marianne.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Well, so, a little bit about the project. You know, I just want to let folks know what this is about. Art for an Oil-Free Coast is basically what happened is that, or maybe I should immediately just toss it over to you, Brian, because I know that you were one of the instigators of the project, and Allison yourself as well. But perhaps, Brian, we can start with you. Tell us about the project. What are we doing here? What are you doing here?
Well, it began at Allison's house over breakfast with Mark Hobson, who's been the major organizer of the artists for this project. We're all feeling absolutely desperate about the potential for a pipeline bringing supertankers to the coast. And so the conversation got around to what can we do, as it always does. And Mark and Allison reminisced about the project in 1989, the Carmana Valley project, where they got artists together. And it jumped from there. It jumped right out as a brilliant idea. And I said, I spoke for Raincoast and said, we'd be really, really happy to help organize this and to do what was required to do the logistics to bring it to fruition. The idea was, of course, to use art to get really prominent and very emotionally connected artists to interpret and represent the coast in a way that photography, I don't think, can. Just to illustrate the emotional connections. The original idea was a book, and then the idea grew and grew various heads and hearts and spread to a much bigger project.
And it is a huge project. Allison, when I was at the gallery earlier, you were talking about some of the people involved, and you were just saying that you didn't think there had ever been a show with this many... I don't know what's the descriptor that I want to use, well-known, I guess, artists and painters that have come together in one place in Nanaimo that we've never seen this before.
Yeah, and in all the years that I've been here, I've never seen a show with so many accomplished artists in this genre in one room. There's some really extraordinary paintings.
So give us a sense, give listeners a sense for those that don't know about it. Who are some of the artists?
Well, first I just want to remind them that it's at the Nanaimo Art Gallery downtown on Commercial Street.
And I'm also going to jump in there and say that it is showing until January 5th. And, you know, really it's a stunning exhibition. So, you know, make a point of getting down there during this festive season. Allison, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I hate to list them because there's so many wonderful artists, but some other than the people in the room here with me today would include Robert Bateman, Carol Evans, Mark Hobson, Ben Davidson, Craig Benson has a wonderful bronze sculpted bowl piece. Mm-hmm. There's not just paintings, but also carvings, and two-dimensional things, and three-dimensional things.
And then there's also writers and poets.
Yes. Well, when they made the book, and it is a beautiful book, they decided to include, along with the prose, which is really informative and talks about the place, a poem to start each section. And I was very pleased about that because I'm also a poet. And I think that, like painting, poetry can take the heart to a place that, prose is kind of more the logical, information-based part of the book, and the poetry works on the same plane as the visual art. It kind of reminds us that this is also not just an economic, but also a spiritual question about what's going to happen to this part of the world.
So you've got these two sides to the project. You know, you've got this coming together of this creativity and this spirituality and this recognition for this incredibly stunning area. And yet you also, as you mentioned, Allison, have many accomplished artists and writers that are involved in the book. You know, just to also mention, you know, David Suzuki, he wrote the foreword. Bryony Penn, she wrote a piece. Also Jesse Husty, Wade Davis, anthropologist and ethnobotanist. And these are all very well-known names. And so too are some of the painters that you mentioned. And I'm curious, I mean, of course, when you bring together a project of this scope, when you have well-known, accomplished Canadian artists involved in it, it creates exposure then for the entire project. And I'm curious, and I'm not sure who to direct this question to, Brian, Allison. You know, did you seek out these people, or how did you bring these 50 artists together?
Well, Mark approached the artists, and we have a relationship at Raincoast with the Suzuki Foundation, and so some of those people, and with Bryony, of course, was on our board, and Jesse is a very close friend in Bella Bella, who's an elected councillor now, and a very, very beautiful writer. So they were all sort of a variety of contacts that we had, but Mark approached all of the artists. He has a relationship with many of them, and his own integrity and reputation has made him the logical choice to approach the artists. One of the things I'd like to say is that all of these artists donated their time and donated these works as well, these works of art.
So. Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about how that happened, Brian. I know that you were very much involved in, I want to say navigating, but not in that organizing these 50 artists to go up into the region and spend time there, spend 5 days there, and then find their inspiration from actually being in that region. So what did that look like, bringing 50 artists up into the Great Bear Rainforest?
Well, it's a very remote place, so we had to use everything. It's what I've been doing for the last 35 years, is getting people up into these places and around. So, but we had to use all of the resources available. There were several of the lodges, the beautiful eco-lodges that contributed accommodation and food, several of the eco-tour boats that are sort of nature-based tourism, including my old vessel Maple Leaf and Columbia 3 and Blue Water Adventures. They all contributed accommodation and food, as well as our own vessel Achiever. And then we had to fly them up to various locations using chartered planes and scheduled flights and float planes. And so it was quite a logistical task getting everybody up to these different locations, and we spread them right through from the north to the south in the right through the Great Bear Rainforest.
Beautiful. And so when the artists came, maybe I can draw Dan and Harold in a little bit. I'd like to talk about your process. I mean, you came into the area, you spent 5 days there. And Harold, let's start with you. What was your process like in terms of coming to the area and finding inspiration for your piece? And just for so that people know, Harold, you paint in watercolors, just to remind folks from off the top. And the piece that you did is Halibut Catcher. And it's a stunning piece of really a halibut catcher at work on his boat, bringing in a fish, bringing in a halibut. And so what was the process like for you in terms of going up there and finding that particular inspiration?
It was just a great experience, Mary. And Mark phoned me, I think, in February and said, hey, would you be part of this? And we'd worked together before, and I said yes right away. And Brian didn't mention in the logistic part of it how difficult it was for a lot of people to fit their time into Raincoast time, and so all these things had to be worked around, and it was a bit of a panic for me. And we flew up, and Brian took us up on Achiever, and we spent a really nice afternoon, one of the rare days that it was sunny up there, I think, for the evening going up. And right from Bella Bella up, we saw otters, we saw whales, we saw a number of whales in the trip up, and along with a lot of bird life and that, and some very scenic country. So it was just like off to a flying start, like you're invigorated and into the world of what was possible to paint almost instantly. And I was fortunate enough to stay in Clem too. And the people living in the village there, they were great hosts. And Chief Charlie was just wonderful. He put on all his costume and that. We're down in the Big Bear Lodge and in Spirit Bear Lodge, and the whole setting, you're just absorbed into it. And plus our adventures out and up the inlets to various locations. We saw bears, we soaked up a lot of rain, and we saw more bears and more rain, but it was just fantastic. It was a great place to go and become inspired.
Fantastic. And so in your painting, you're very much depicting the working of a fisherman.
That's what I do. I paint things, and I come from a workaday world. I spent my working life as a trucker, and so I'm very much the working guy, and that's what I know, whether it be trucking or ranching or fishing boats. That's my world, so I paint what I know.
Mm. And what is your process like? Do you work? Did you do your sketching up there? Do you work off photographs?
I did some sketching there. I think we all did a little painting. Actually, I'm not much of a sketcher. I prefer to get right into the paint. I just start with my painting, and I take my camera. My camera's my tool, and I'm basically a studio painter because my paintings are so involved. But I like to have a sense of what I'm painting and where I'm at, so I have a feel. So when I'm painting, and even though I use a number of photographs, and I always use quite a number in each painting, there's a lot in there that isn't photographs, and I have to fill in. And so for me to do that, I have to understand my subject, my area, and where I'm trying to go with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the details of the boats and the industry around that, and how they're used, and what it is to be a fisherman, so that all that is accurate.
Yes, and the other thing is that, you know, as I was learning to paint and draw on that, people said, oh, you know, don't get too involved and don't get too fussy. And my mind was saying, well, I'll show you fussy. And yeah, I got right at it. I'm afraid I tend to still be a little bit that way. So that's just my world.
Yeah.
But it was such an honor to be part of this group. It was just a fantastic thing to do. And to think that we could maybe help out and be the messenger in some way and send this message out to people who haven't been there, given any thought about these tankers on the coast, because we have pipelines all over the country. And we're going to continue to have pipelines all over the country, and we'll live with them, learn to live with them better. But these large ships going off through such dangerous waters, and so much damage can be done. We really do have to try and stop them.
And this is the real goal of the project, right, is to raise awareness exactly about this, the not only the pipelines, but the supertankers then that would be traveling through this pristine area. And that's the goal of the project, is to raise awareness and halt the movement in this direction.
I think letting people know what's at stake and trying to get the message across of the inevitability of a catastrophe. In some of the other work we've done at Raincoast, we've studied a lot of the history of these terminals and tankers in areas where they operate, and without exception, there are catastrophes.
Well, that's it. And Brian, you know, your piece "Whale Soup" is which is a written piece in the book, really speaks to, you know, just the richness of life in the area. And I guess when I read it, the thing that really struck me is that it's not even, I mean, of course, a spill is the thing that would be particularly devastating, but even the traffic itself is going to dramatically affect that area. Can you speak to that a little bit?
There's no question. I mean, you look at most of the marine mammals live in an acoustic world. The visibility in water is not very great. So they rely on their hearing for navigation. That's how they find their food. That's how they locate their food. And that's how they communicate and find each other in this incredible soup. It's a big biological soup. But they that's how they live. And it would be, you know, like us having bright lights flash and losing our eyesight for periods of time as these ships go by. So they live in an acoustic world, and it's a quiet world at this point. And at some point, there becomes enough of noise and traffic that they can't feed, they have to move out of these areas. And that's been documented in other parts of the world, the displacement from really important feeding areas. And I've sailed in oceans all over the world, and all up and down this coast in Southeast Alaska, and you simply could not choose a worse place. That's what that piece, Whale Soup, was about, was that this is a place where all of the marine mammals find incredible sustenance, and they also find quiet. So those things are possibly coincidental, but not likely. And you can really, really disturb the acoustic environment. And the beginning of this in the research that I've done about these terminals is that it's never one. They don't build one. There's another one that gets built across the inlet. There's already a proposal. There's already a liquid natural gas plant that's under construction. And so there will be LNG tankers added to this. And so you just simply couldn't choose a worse place for this. It's just so rich with marine life.
And of course, then a spill is just, you know, utterly devastating, and the area would never recover.
Well, particularly with bitumen, because we have no idea. There's never been research done. Without question, it will affect, you know, the whole water column, right from the surface, right down to the benthic to the bottom. It will find its way into river estuaries and all of these really complex little tiny interactions and ecosystems. It'll work its way into that, and it's unimaginable what the consequences of it are.
And very much on a cellular level, we had Ricky Ott in, a marine biologist, in the fall, and she really spoke to some of those details. And we'll dig up what podcast that was, and we'll let folks know if they want to know the technical details of that, then they can have a listen to that podcast. But it's true, the effects are just, you know, extremely damaging, and beyond what we can even conceive of.
And long-lasting.
Yeah. Brian, you came to us with some sounds from killer whales, and I'd like to just take it's just a 20-30 second segue, and I'd like just to, you know, have a listen.
Sure.
You're listening to Be the Media here on CHLY, and I'm here in the studio with artists and writers Brian Falconer, Allison Watt, Harold Allinson, Dan Gray, and Kim Goldberg to talk about the project Art for an Oil-Free Coast. And we were just listening to some killer whales, and while we were doing so, Allison and Brian were discussing which whales they were, which, you know, Brian, you were mentioning that one of your colleagues knows the whales particularly by their particular calls, because each one has their own individual calls.
Yeah, they have their own discrete calls right down to their what called matriline, their family units, and only that family unit makes particular calls. So you can tell which whales are calling right down to the very family.
I'd like to shift gears a little bit and jump over to you, Kim, and you know, just take a pause, I guess, to switch gears to the writing side of things. As we were talking about earlier, there is prose, which Brian was involved in, and also then, of course, poetry. And Kim, you submitted a poem called Tidal Pull. And would you read that poem for us?
Sure. This is Tidal Pull. It opens the chapter in the book on estuaries. I always know when you are returning because I start dreaming of the estuary. At work, in long meetings, all the chairs dissolve into muck-stuck logs, slick shadows, raw reek of lost bodies caught on high ground, lying twisted in creamy shells, smelling of life and death at the same time, soft tideline, tonguing moist membranes, stroking silken beds of kelp, helpless against undulating fluids, salty, oozing, penetrating every pore, encrusting tufty mounds of glasswort, and the whispers, oh, the never-ending whispers of papery grasses, faster, rattling, shattering scream of gull overhead. Spent shotgun cartridges sinking in brine. Time stands still, lies flat, splayed. Dampness dangling like corpse legs. Slime mats glisten in dimming light. Blue-black water shapeshifts, trades places with raven's back, intergrades openly, endlessly, blameless.
Thank you. What brought you to the focus on tidal pools?
Well, I think it's tidal pool, actually, and I spent a lot of time locally at the Nanaimo River estuary, and estuaries everywhere are just phenomenal areas. They're so rich biologically and diverse, but also what fascinates me about estuaries is I have the feeling that I'm exploring a human body or some kind of a body when I'm on the estuary. All of its slick surfaces and these mats, these skin-thin sheets of algae and gunk that get all glommed together. So it really is one of the few chances we have to sort of externalize what a journey through our own body might be. An estuary is a very sensuous place. And so somehow that all combined to create this poem.
Mm. What has the experience been like for you? In being involved in this project?
Oh, it's just phenomenal. It's really great to see the way the public's been responding. And I think we were touching on some of this earlier and how people were commenting that sometimes visual art, a painting can perhaps do more to render an area than a photograph can, how poetry can awaken something in people that prose might not. And it's almost as though this project and the creation of the book itself is really a whole brain experience, because it's addressing both right and left hemispheres. And perhaps that's what's required to really spark a strong response from people, because it's almost as though the people who live in coastal BC, Nanaimo and the other cities that the show has toured to at this point, Victoria, Vancouver, Salt Spring, hardly need to be told. People are automatically very excited about this. What would be really neat is to see this show go eastward to reach people and to see what effect it might have on people, this whole brain experience of the artistic, intuitive, emotive right brain and then the factual information in the book addressing left brain requirements, what effect it might have on people off the BC coast if it were to travel eastward, as perhaps it can.
Mm-hmm. Allison and I were talking about that earlier in terms, I know Raincoast has in the works hopes to bring it to Calgary, possibly Ottawa down the road. And you know, we were just talking about the fact that in some ways it's much more needed in the rest of Canada, because there is a greater awareness here on the coast because we're all living amongst these issues. We are you know, aware to a degree, you know, and that's clear from the overwhelming, you know, activism and the overwhelming just number of voices of people standing up and saying, no, we don't want this here. We don't want the tankers. We don't want the pipelines. Dan, I'd like to turn to you and ask you a little bit about the process for you. I know that when you went up to the Great Bear Rainforest, you painted on site.
My art is always done from life. It's my process is to take my tools of the trade, which are the pastels and a surface to work on, and try to make an emotional response to whatever I find in front of me. And I was so fortunate to be gathered up on this project and brought along by Mark, and I had some trepidation about painting on a boat in the rain and rocking and rolling with a surly crew and a bunch of artists, and it was just wonderful. The trip I was up with was wonder after wonder, and it expresses what was presented to me up there, and being so fortunate to be able to work right there is my response to a part of our land that can't be defiled by oil. It's a tremendous place. I had no idea it was like it is. It's a liquid place to me. It was from the water in the sea to the clouds to the water falling from the fjord. It is a place of liquid, and where better than a dry pastel to be in a place like this.
And it sounds too, Dan, like it I mean, certainly a big part of the experiences was about your art and your process, but it sounds too like a lot of it was about the connections that you made from the experience of traveling up.
Travel is always about the people that you travel with, and to be up there on the Achiever with a family that has got together for 5 days was tremendous. I was very fortunate to come back with a brother and an ancestor. So that's tremendous.
Beautiful. It's clear, and I, you know, it's clear that we could talk about this for another hour very easily. Allison, you put both a painting, you have both a paintings and a poem in the book, and your painting is Sockeye, and it is a very vivid depiction of the salmon in the area, and you also have a poem for us. And so maybe I'll ask you the same question. How, you know, I know that you were one of the instigators, you were there from the, you know, from the onset. So what has this whole journey been like for you? And maybe you can finish off by reading your poem Creek Walker.
I'd be happy to. Well, I'm lucky enough to be able to work up in the Great Bear Rainforest regularly. I usually go up every fall when the salmon are in to work as an eco-tour guide, and I did that for many years on Brian's boat, his first boat, Maple Leaf. And so I really feel so passionate about the cycle of salmon. It's what drives everything up there at that time of year, and it's part of what makes that part of the coast so precious. It's really a planetary resource. And to have those massive watersheds still intact with intact salmon runs that support all these other forms of life. So, and plus the sockeye are beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're really beautiful fish. Mm-hmm. So they were fun to paint.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, for folks listening, we were mentioning earlier that we had Ricky Ott on the show, and she talked about what kind of damage can happen to the environment if we have, you know, a bitumen spill, for example. And I just wanted to let people know that that full interview can be found on episode 93, and you can find that at bethemedia.ca. We are sadly running out of time, and I just want to say congratulations to all of you for being part of this incredible project. You know, it is really, the book itself is stunning, and then going to the Nanaimo Art Gallery, you know, is even more stunning. It's just so incredible to see these paintings in real life. You know, they really speak much, so much more. So I do encourage people to go to the Nanaimo Art Gallery and check it out. The exhibit is on until January 5th. And it is free, so you can go and take a look at the paintings. There is a film. We didn't even touch on the film. Do go to raincoast.org, and you can get all the information. We encourage you to support this project. And certainly, the paintings are up for auction. People can go, and they can put in bids for the paintings. There is a beautiful, an additional book on the side of poetry that people can also purchase. And, really, this is a one-of-a-kind exhibit and one-of-a-kind project that's coming through Nanaimo that's not to be missed. Allison, maybe we can just finish off with Creek Walker. This is Allison Watt with Creek Walker.
On the Canoona River, I meet a man who walks this path each fall. See how the river gives the pink a hump, he says, the chum a snout of snaggle teeth. He opens a waterproof notebook. Numbers must be fed. How many fish have escaped the mouth and the net? The banks are littered with salmon, dragged from spawning beds, eyes sockets hollowed by ravens, heads opened, brains licked out by the bear's hot tongues. He lives alone on a boat, a creek walker for 30 years. We stand together in the rain, watching the water. No talk of hunger, exhaustion, death and birth, how a river changes a man.
It's coming on Christmas, they're cutting down trees. Putting up reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. But it don't snow here, it stays pretty green. I'm gonna make a lot of money, then I'm gonna quit this crazy scene. I wish I had a river I could skate away on. So long, I would teach my feet to fly. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I made my baby to help me, you know, he put me at ease, and he loved me so naughty, made me weak in the knees. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I'm so hard to handle, I'm selfish and I'm sad, now I gone and lost the best baby that I ever had. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long I would teach my feet to Christmas, they're cutting. sharp reindeer singing songs of joy and peace. I wish I had a river I could skate away on.
You're listening to Be the Media here on CHLY 101.7 FM, and we just had artists and writers Brian Falconer, Allison Watt, Harold Allinson, Dan Gray, and Kim Goldberg in the studio to talk about art for an oil-free coast. It is happening right now at the Nanaimo Art Gallery. Do go and check it out. It's there until January 5th as well. Also go to the website, so that is raincoast.org, and there you can actually download the ebook for free. The book is stunning. I encourage you to take a look at it. You can also download the film for free. So do go, and the film documents the whole process and the issue. So do go and check all of that out at, again, raincoast.org. And shifting gears, but still, you know, playing on the subject of water, we now have with us Holly Bright and DB Boyko with us in the studio. And this is, I have you both here, of course, because there is a show coming up on January 4th. There's two shows, in fact. It's What the Water Whispers and Avatar. So today we're going to be focusing mostly on What the Water Whispers, and next week we'll have some of the key people in from Avatar, but we'll get to that. So just as a point of introduction, Holly, welcome back. And Holly Bright is a dance artist who is invested in performance in the solo form for the past 12 years. She has a repertoire of works by the likes of Deborah Dunn, Barbara Bourget, Susanna Hood, Margie Gillis, Judith Adams, Judith Gary, and Holly has enjoyed choreographing musical theater with the late Jeremy Tao, Dean Chadwick, and Bill Miner. What the Water Whispers is the first work with professional artists since her choreographic introduction to Nanaimo in 1996 with the yellow wallpaper. Holly founded the Crimson Coast Dance Society in 1998 to create a place for professional contemporary dance in Nanaimo. She continues to curate, produce, mentor, and perform. And Holly was awarded the City of Nanaimo's Honor in Culture Award in 2010 for her contribution in the arts in this city. You can check out her work and details about this show, What the Water Whispers, and also Avatar at crimsoncoastdance.org as we chat. DB Boyko is with us as well. DB is one of Canada's most adventuresome vocalists. She has performed with influential artists and ensembles from the local and international creative music scene. A specialist in experimental voice, she performs regularly with Vancouver's Orchestra Futura and the duo Idiolala, a vocal tour de force with singer Christine Duncan that just completed a Canadian tour of a site-specific work for public washrooms entitled Stall. She is also a composer and interdisciplinary collaborator whose works have appeared in a variety of dance and theater productions, such as Dry Lips, Autumn Move, to Kappa's Casing, for the Arts Club Theater, and at festivals such as La Voix se fait entendre in Montreal. DB has spent the last 20 years as director and curator of new music at the Western Front, one of Canada's preeminent artist-run centres, where she has presented the vanguard of contemporary experimental music in concerts, residencies, and community outreach programs. Holly and DB, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us, Marion.
It's a pleasure. Well, both of these pieces are scheduled for performance on January 4th at the Malaspina Theatre on VIU campus, and they do promise to be quite exciting, innovative, and also really to, they're going to provide, I think, a lot of ground for audience to consider their relationship with technology, and these are some of the themes that we love to talk about mm-hmm. on this show. So maybe just to start, Holly, I know that you conceived of this piece, specifically What the Water Whispers, and so set it up for us. What is it about? What can the audience expect?
The piece for me was inspired by an installation by Simon Warner, who's a British photographer and performing artist. And it the piece in particular that got me going was one that he made by attaching a camera to the bow of a boat and sending it down three different rivers that arrive at the same estuary in the Yorkshire Valley or Yorkshire area. And it's the Ouse, the Wharfe, and the Aire rivers. And what's fascinating is that he edited them, really revealing the personality of each river. I mean, none of them are class five rapids. Nonetheless, they all have this remarkable personality, and particularly when filmed at that minute level, at the very surface or just under the surface. And they he edited them so they arrive at the same estuary. They do arrive at the same estuary, but that they arrive at the same time. So there was something incredibly just touching about that anticlimactic moment after witnessing the personality of these rivers and their shore and their flow and their turbulence and their calm, and then to have them just all arrive, and it was just this zen-like moment that I wasn't expecting. And I realized that there's a way that, in spite of everything that happens, and I immediately related it to life, and in spite of what happens in individual lives, at the end of the day, life goes on. And there's a flow that is life force, and it continues. And I wanted to see if I could possibly show that. There's a kind of an irony there, as well as a beauty, and an expansive way of thinking about life for me.
Mm. Well, it sounds beautiful, and it's great to hear about the conception, and I still am really curious about what does that mean in tangible terms, in terms of, you know, the performance on January 4th?
Well, you'll see a solo artist, Genevieve Johnson, who is a remarkable Buteau artist, which is an art form that works from imagery. And I love imagery and have had the opportunity to work in that genre myself. And we are able to meet at this beautiful place of curiosity and energy. And Genevieve and I work together to bring imagery to movement. And in particular, through the Buteau genre. So we'll see this artist performing. She's brilliant and touchingly beautiful. I thought of her when I was listening to the poetry from the artist for an Oil Freak host. She's moving poetry. Mm. And along with that is a set that there was something about wanting to see a manipulation of space and also texture and architecture and a flow from one to the other. And I don't really know why. I just know that that's what I envisioned. And now that I see it, I'm seeing the metaphor and I think everyone who sees it will see something different. And then there's also the live music, which is really drawn from the artist's impulses, from what they've been witnessing in Genevieve's movement.
Okay. Well, maybe that's a good time then to shift focus to you, DB, mm-hmm. in terms of the music. Is it going to be improvised?
Well, there are several contributors to this, and I'm part of that, including the work by Nicole and Chris, who it's been actually a bit of a blind date. And I'm just a little backtracking here. Holly and I actually worked on a variation of this a couple of years ago on Gabriola Island for the Dancing Man Festival, and worked this as two sort of simultaneous solos, one vocal and one with the physical imagery. And she has worked with Chris and Nicole over the last several years, and so they've created kind of a bed track of the journey that Genevieve takes, and we're kind of weaving in and out of that. We're part of one of the undercurrents in the river that flows through. And joining me is Hillary Peach, who also lives on Gabriel Island, and she's parsing a piece of poetry which is being woven through the piece. And I will be using voice, extended voice, so there is an improvisatory aspect to that, but obviously it's, you know, Hillary and I have been looking very much at all the theatrical arcs of the piece, and they're quite subtle, but well, the imagery that Genevieve is working with, we're trying to either mirror or contrast with either having listened to one of the previous speakers about that sort of the shift between left and right brain, so the text having a more cognitive aspect of that, but even though it's sort of dropped in pieces, it's about a kind of an accumulation of an experience, so you're getting these text images, and then the sound is either musical, or it may be the vocal sound is more musical, or it is more about kind of the conscience of the dancer.
And do you use words?
At this point I haven't, but you never know what will happen with that. But at this point, Hillary's that's sort of her contribution to the work.
Okay. It's a nice melding of all the people coming together. So now Holly, there are two pieces in the show. There's another piece, Avatar, by Freya Olofsson and Hugh Conacher. And why these two pieces together?
What was interesting to me was the way that we're using technology. I'm using simple technology. It's projection. We'll split the screen. We're going into the theater soon to figure out exactly how we're going to do that. Are we using one computer and one projector and splitting it three ways? Are we using two computers, two projectors, or what combination we'll use and exactly where the projections are going to arrive on the set? Because I'm projecting this piece by Simon Warner. And so what was interesting to me is the use of technology, in my case, to connect people with nature, or perhaps their own nature, and Freya's, which is a look at how humans connect with each other through the internet. Mm. So it's quite a, they're almost polar opposites in terms of their intention, and I'm curious also as a producer, I'm curious about what that experience will be like to witness, and will there be just completely different senses that are awakened from witnessing both? I think they're both really strong pieces and really different. So we have a nice intermission for people to cleanse their palate, take a walk outside, come in, look around the lobby where.
Well, and humans are multifaceted, right? So, I mean, while on one side, I think it's fair to say that most humans do want to have that connection to nature and that is, you know, spiritually gratifying and grounding, many of us also have this compulsion to be deeply involved in the digital world. And part of that really lends itself to Freya's piece, Avatar, in terms of having also this compulsion to post, to, you know, exhibit parts of ourselves in any event online. So, you know, I think in a sense, having the two pieces together talks about that multifaceted element of being human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, I love that technology can be used in so many different ways and how it serves so many different purposes. The idea for What the Water Whispers is that that witnesses will have a visceral experience, an empathetic experience to the combination of the moving body and the projected image, as well as the oral stimulation from the sound that is taking place and the words that are dropped in by Hillary Peach's poetry. And that they'll have this opportunity to identify themselves in the journey of their own life. This is a representation of a journey through life. And I'm hoping it's global enough that everyone can relate to it and empathize and create their own metaphor around it in response to everything that they're seeing on stage at the time, and then share it. And there's a way that in the human experience, we talk about and around things. Sometimes there are no words for exactly what we're trying to say. So we kind of say, it was as if, it's kind of like, it was as though. And we can look at each other when we witness something and shake our heads yes, and really have no way of speaking about it directly. And for me, that's what is the most powerful about dance. And I didn't set out to achieve that. And yet, as it's happening, I can see that evolving with the piece, and it's very satisfying.
This whole piece has been a real collaboration.
Oh, it has.
In terms of all the people involved.
It wouldn't be what it is without it. And I started with Genevieve back when the Nanaimo Arts Council had the Spirit Fest in 2010. We were asked to present a proposal, so we did. She and I began to work, and we spark off of each other. I came in with my proposal, and she took that and ran with it and came in with her proposals around it. So the work would not be what it is without her creative and choreographic input as well. Mm-hmm. I can hardly call it my own in that very real way. And then I bring in these fantastic musicians, and they also bring in their imagery that comes up as they witness the dance unfolding, and the set designer has done the same thing.
Mike Tarr.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, of course, DB was speaking about some of the people who were involved in the musical score and the collaborative process of that. And there's, you know, Nicole Arendt from the Vancouver Island Symphony, Chris Hellman, the soundscape artist, of course, DB Boyko, who's here with us today on voice, and then Hilary Peach, of course, providing the poetry. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot here. Can you give us a sense, or maybe you prefer to leave it as a surprise? I was going to ask, how does the sound, movement, and imagery come together in the piece?
Well, what has transpired is that I started with Nicole and Chris supporting the Nanaimo Arts Council Spirit Fest presentation of the development of the work. It wasn't a presentation of the work in full. It was actually a research and development opportunity where I invited the public in, and I invited their stories about rivers and water, and showed them what Genevieve and I had been working on, as well as ways to coordinate projection and surfaces to project on. So all of this was very experimental. And Chris and Nicole came in at the last moment and improvised and produced some really beautiful soundscape to accompany. And then the Dancing Man Festival commissioned DB and I to work together, and we decided that we would continue this process. And so she brought in water harp and voice, and I had the opportunity to explore more movement and ideas and imagery. And then finally, Mike Tarr was going on sabbatical and asked if I would work with him on lighting design particularly. And so it's been this kind of, you know, I've kind of collected people as I've flow down the river of this creation, mm-hmm. and everyone is sticking with it and bringing a renewed energy. I don't think anyone is relying on what they did in the past. Everyone is coming forward with perhaps a more integrated experience of the work.
And I was going to ask you, actually, segueing off of that, DB, I was going to ask you, if this work touched on other experiences, other work you've done in terms of vocal performance, but as Holly indicates, you know, this is something new.
Well, every time that you come together with a different group of people, it's a new experience. And I finished my previous thought, but it was a bit of a blind date in terms of several of us not having an opportunity to work together. And so you have to take that leap of faith and find the ways that you can connect with text, with different kinds of instrumentation, people working in different kinds of genres. And for me, I have quite a bit of experience in the dance and theater world, so I'm always looking for that theatrical arc. And so Hillary and I were able to really connect on that quite quickly together to see, you know, how all of us wanted to serve the dance. And Genevieve is a fantastic performer. And so, you know, how do we give her the energy that she needs to propel herself through this 30-minute piece? You know, it's mm-hmm. quite a tour de force. And, you know, how do you match it? How do you recede? How do you underpin? How do you sometimes overshadow it in order to just to give that, to make it that river, which includes all of those things? Mm-hmm. So for me, it brings, you know, all aspects of what my experience has been as a composer and a performer over the years.
I look forward to it. I really feel it. So again, this is January 4th. It's 8 p.m. It's at the Malaspina Theater. You can buy tickets in advance from Lobelia's Lair, House of Indigo, and Arbutus Music at $20 or at the door for $25. And I know it's also $15 for students, and there's group rates available. You can find more information at crimsoncoastdance.org. Again, that's crimsoncoastdance.org. And, you know, just touching, DB, on what you were talking about in terms of, you know, bringing a lot of collaborators in and throwing them into the mix and seeing what happens. I do want to mention, too, that on January 5th, you're going to be doing a series of workshops on that day. And so on the 5th, again at the Malaspina Theater from 10:30 to 12:30, there's a workshop called Moving into Creation with yourself, Holly Bright, and Genevieve Johnson. And, of course, pulling on what the water whispers and the process of that. And then, again, another workshop from 1 to 3 p.m. called Demystifying the Use of Video in Live Performance, and that is with Freya Borg Olofsson and Hugh Conisher, who of course are behind Avatar. So I'm looking forward to it, and I think, you know, you've done a good job of still, you know, not letting too much out. So there's still a lot of, you know, anticipation.
I don't want to give too much away. And I think that it's hard to imagine when, you know, when I talk about it, and there's also a way that there's still a fair amount that's unknown, and it's really a privilege to have the opportunity to work with everyone who I want to and put everything together that I want to in the first and this will be the first time I get to show it with any production values. Mm. So it's not complete yet, and it's complete enough. It's certainly complete enough that Genevieve could go and dance it anytime, anywhere, and the piece can exist as it is. And at the same time, I think that there's more. And so I'm just really excited to have the opportunity to sit back and witness it myself and see what it's saying and what it's calling for.
Mm. Well, I look forward to experiencing it on January 4th.
Thank
you. And, you know, maybe we'll see it evolve, too, into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. And, yeah. And I look forward to the premiere here in Nanaimo.
Yeah.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Marianne.
Folks, you've been listening to Be the Media on CHLY, and I think we've run over time, Neil. And so there it goes. We've had a fabulous show. It has been jam-packed. We started the show with, of course, Brian Falconer, Allison Watt, Harold Allinson, Dan Gray, and Kim Goldberg talking about art for an oil-free coast. Again, I just want to mention that show is on at the Nanaimo Art Gallery until the 5th of January. You can go check it out there or raincoast.org for information. And thanks, too, to Holly Bright and DB Boyko, who were in to speak about the upcoming performance, What the Water Whispers, and Avatar, both happening on January 4th at the Malaspina Theater.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Be the Media is brought to you by the Media Studies Department and the Media Research Lab at VIU.
How does that grab you?